Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Signal-Reed, and our guest this week, the Reverend Dr. Carol Finley. Book clubs for inmates have proved an enormous success, spreading across the country. What are the most important things they've done for those who participate?
At first, we just used to think that literature would be good for anybody in prison. Filling time, and of course literature, if you love it, you understand that it is transformative, it does things for you. But as we moved along and got responses back from inmates and saw what was happening, we started to understand that they were learning very important pro-social skills, listening respectfully, speaking respectfully. Mm-hmm. These men and women have not grown up in houses where there have been discussions around the table. That's a very middle-class sort of idea of family life. And in prison, nobody's interested in asking what you think of something. I think at first they were extremely shocked. You know, me? You want to hear what I have to say? Yes, yes, we'd say. And as we trained volunteers, we said to them, you know, it's encouraging. Respectful speaking and listening. Well, that happened because one fellow in that first book club was saying something and another fellow across the way disagreed with him and got up, walked across the circle and started to look as if he was going to punch him out.
Oh, my heavens.
So we intervened. And then we started to talk, the volunteers and I, and we said, you know, they don't know how to have civil discourse. We've got to teach them that. Hmm. And so we noticed that after about 6 months of being in a book club, an inmate won't see things in black and white, but will be able to weigh things and see the gray areas. Now, you know, that's really important for anger management.
Absolutely,
And it's a skill that most of us learn through university, say, or the end of high school, but most of these people have not learned it. They feel terrific once they have.
If there's a great big burly guy striding across the room to a fellow inmate, how do you sort of intervene in something like that and control that or quieten it down?
Well, I mean, I just said, and so did, I think it was Eric Friesen, who's a broadcaster, a really strong fellow. Both of us are very, very strong-minded. We said, you know, hey, just a minute, fellows, just a minute. We're not going to have any of that. Now you go and take your place, and we walk towards them. And I've never been threatened in a prison, but I know that if I did call for help, within 30 seconds there would be six or seven guards there. So we sat the fellow down, and then we talked about what had happened and why it had, and the sort of feelings that one can have, and that they're not to take those sort of statements about a book personally.
Right.
But there's a way to explore ideas, and every idea on the table is accepted.
Yeah, and it also turns around and becomes a freedom to say what you think.
And that they found absolutely wonderful. Mm. And at first, somebody joining a book club says the most outrageous things, but we nod frantically because it is to encourage at least the beginning of speaking in a group that then evolves into very thoughtful and helpful discussions.
Yeah,
and
once they feel safe. Yeah.
And once they learn about this respectful listening and speaking.
It's wonderful. Another skill they may not have is a reading skill, right? So how do you deal with people who have reading difficulties who want to join the group?
Well, people do self-select to come into the book club. They come in voluntarily. So many of them have never read a book since, say, grade 10 when they had to and never finished it. You know, that's the way literature is taught in high school. Those sorts of people, we say to them, look, the first book's going to be a bit tricky, but you just persevere and read at least half of it. The second book is going to be easier, and the third one, you're off to the races. But for some, in some prisons, we have a buddy system. And we developed this when there was a person who was blind. We got somebody to read the book for him and then understood we could make a buddy system for people who were having difficulty finishing reading, we would have somebody who was a good reader come alongside them. We call them our ambassadors, mm-hmm. and there are two of them in every group. And so that has worked.
Well, it's wonderful to hear that it did, you know, was a success and it did grow so much. But now that it has grown, what's the new goals for the future?
Well, we're still not into every penitentiary in Canada, so we'll keep going. We grew very quickly, and now we need to sort of consolidate. And we are also thinking of an inmate child reading program, because that has been such a great success in the United States.
Hmm.
We have circles of support, and we offer scholarships, university scholarships, to inmates in our book clubs who are academically able. We have several that we're helping now, including Omar Cotter, who was in our book club in Bowdoin. But all of our scholarship students do extraordinarily well. I mean, there's some very, very bright and able people. So we'll just keep expanding, but more slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And where we're asked, we have a number of penitentiaries that are waiting for us to put in book clubs.
And so how do you get your volunteers?
Always, you know, through people who are connected to the book clubs pretty well. We do it on social media, and people get in touch with us through our website, www.bookclubsforinmates. You can donate, too, while you go on the website. They ask to volunteer, but often if we have somebody who's stepping down in a book club, one of the other volunteers will say, you know, I have three or four friends who would absolutely right. love to do this. So that's sort of what we do. Most of our volunteers actually stay on for 5-6 years.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Well, how about another passage from a book that has done the rounds?
That's right. Well, this is called The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian, and it's by Sherman Alexie, and it's an American book, actually. It's a memoir, but it is very true to the Canadian experience for Indigenous people, and we've used it very successfully west of Ontario, because our book clubs are about 50% Indigenous west of Ontario, and then, of course, we are in Indigenous healing lodges, which are prisons, so we use it there. This book is full of that sort of lovely self-deprecatory humor that we see in all of our Canadian Indigenous writings. Anyway, Sherman Alexie, the fellows love this because it's another sort of overcoming obstacles story. And Sherman Alexie was born with a lot of disabilities, and so he writes about it. Well, I obviously survived the surgery. I wouldn't be writing this if I didn't, but I have all sorts of physical problems that are directly the result of my brain damage. First of all, I ended up having 42 teeth. The typical human has 32, right? I had 42, 10 more than usual, 10 more than normal, 10 teeth past human. My teeth got so crowded that I could barely close my mouth. I went to the Indian Health Service to get some teeth pulled so I could eat normally, not like some slobbering vulture. But the Indian Health Service funded major dental work only once a year, so I had to have all the 10 extra teeth pulled in one day. And what's more, our white dentist believed that Indians only felt half as much pain as white people did, so he only gave us half the Novocaine. What a bastard, huh? Indian Health Service also funded eyeglass purchases only once a year and offered one style, those ugly, thick, black plastic ones. My brain damage left me nearsighted in one eye and farsighted in the other, so my ugly glasses were all lopsided because my eyes were so lopsided. My head was so big that little Indian skulls orbited around it. Some of the kids called me Orbit, and other kids just called me Globe. The bullies would pick me up, spin me in circles, put their finger down on my skull and say, I want to go there.
That's awful.
Everybody laughs, especially the First Nations members of the book clubs. They love this humor. They know about it. And of course, Sherman Alexie is a millionaire many times over. He's done extraordinarily well. We've tried to get him into our book clubs, but mm-hmm. it has to be through an agent, and it's way beyond our pocketbook
right.
to do it. So, I mean, what he does is he is a bright guy, and this is only the beginning of the sort of challenges that he has, but he looks over at the white high school, and his one high school on the reservation is terrible. And he figures, I'll go to this white high school, and he gets himself in. He doesn't even have money for lunch food, and he doesn't have shoes. He makes it. He gets through. So it's a wonderful story of overcoming adversity, and it's full of this wonderful, as I was saying, sort of self-deprecatory humor, the sort of laughing at oneself. And yes, I agree that it sounds absolutely awful, but it's very, very amusing
yeah.
to Indigenous readers.
Well, many thanks, Carol, for telling us all about the book clubs and for reading those two passages. We've been talking with Reverend Dr. Carol Finley, founder and director of Book Clubs for Inmates. How can listeners become involved or learn more about the organization, Carol?
I would suggest go to the website, www.bookclubsforinmates, and it's got a lot of stuff there, and there's a section where you can, if you feel like volunteering, you can write to us and we'll see if there's a book club nearby or other ways in which you might want to become involved with our charity.
Wonderful. And listeners, if you'd like to connect with us here at Word on the Hills, please make your comments, queries, or suggestions at our website, www.wordonthehills.com. And if you've missed a program or you'd like to listen to one again, you'll find all our broadcasts archived at the site too. You can listen to them anywhere and anytime. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week, right here on Word on the Hills, Sunday at 1 p.m., repeated on Thursdays at 1 a.m. on Northumberland 897, truly local radio.